Well, hello and welcome to this emergency episode of the Leadership Educator Podcast. If you thought you were dialing into yet another Zoom meeting, you'd be mistaken. So this is Dan Jenkins. I'm Chair and Associate Professor of Leadership and Organizational Studies at the University of Southern Maine.
And I'm Lauren Bullock. I work as an Assistant Professor of Instruction at Temple University, now online everywhere, with this new change in format.
So we are living during unprecedented times. So schools, businesses, towns, universities closing all over the place, and all over the world, all over the globe. So education has shifted in various ways. So we're here to talk about what's happening now and how it impacts leadership educators. This is going to have a little bit more of an informal feel to it, as we're trying to get this podcast produced and out as soon as possible so that our fellow leadership educators can utilize some of this information, some of these tips and strategies to apply to their courses and their programming pretty much right away.
Yeah, yes, this is definitely informal. I feel like that's my whole life every day now. You know, it's like get up, shower, put on sweatpants, go downstairs, get to work instead of the long commute that I usually have or dropping my child off at school as I normally would do on a Monday through Friday. I think the thing that's most exciting about this podcast is our conversation that we were having the other day made me think we should be having this conversation on our podcast with our peers, because we know that right now people are scrambling. They're trying to make decisions about courses. I think about my own programming. My second half of my communicating organizational change class was really like as a project-based experience. So we had 8 steps that we were going to walk through together. Like I would teach, talk, and then students would then do some work and we'd go back and forth and almost kind of workshop these last 6 weeks. And you can't do that online. So I thought this would be a great way for us to talk about some of those resources we were sharing with some of the people that listen.
Yeah. So, I mean, those are all very, really important factors. And some leadership educators have had opportunities to teach online before, whether it be, fully asynchronous or synchronous, and very different types of online programming, but others have not. And some might even say, well, how can you teach leadership online? So we're going to start with faculty and, instructors that are teaching, for credit courses. And then we're going to move to programming. So I'll probably end up speaking more often during the first, chunk of time on this podcast. And then we'll move to Lauren because she has much more expertise in the student affairs, student programming side of things. So yeah, faculty members are being asked to transition online or provide alternative arrangements for courses, oftentimes very, very quickly as things came down. For example, in the University of Maine system, we were doing some preliminary planning at our University of Southern Maine, and things progressed in a day or two from the system office down, and it was, hey, guess what, spring break. And then when everybody comes back from spring break, you are fully online. And so some departments, not ours, luckily, which has been an interesting way to deal with this. We actually offer about 75% of our courses, both at the grad and undergrad level, online, something that has moved probably quite a bit over the last 7 to 8 years or so. But we were lucky to have been a little bit more prepared than many other departments on our campus and within the system, that some had never taught an online course or even opened up their LMS. And so, while teaching online is a useful set of skills to have, we're going to go ahead and make sure that we're mindful of a few things as we move forward.
Hey, you bring up so many really good points. Our situation was a little different in that we had spring break the first full week of March. Our provost a few years ago set it in stone, so we don't have to wonder when it's going to be or guess when it's going to be. It's always the first full 5 days. And so we, right before spring break, our department chair said, hey, be prepared to teach online. Things are getting worse. We're not sure what's going to happen. And so you do prepare, you get some things together and you think the things and you talk to your peers. We came back on a Monday, and on Wednesday they announced that we were going online. Our last classes would be on Friday. So we don't even have the benefit of, an extra week to prepare. It was, Wednesday announcement, Friday official, Monday get started online. And in my instance, I was, preparing to start that Monday, but then I had a conversation with a student and I shared, okay, we'll be ready to go on Monday. And he's like, I don't know where I'm going to be on Monday. And it made me think about first being considerate of our students and what they're going through. So my institution, we're largely undergraduate population. We have a large population that lives on or right off campus, but we still are considered a commuter school. But we have so many students who their housing is connected to their education. And so they're not going to be able to study until they're settled someplace at home. So I think with faculty members, at least faculty and programming, it's first understanding that our students are going through a lot. Just like we're transitioning, they're transitioning. A lot of them didn't want to take online courses and they're now being kind of forced into it as their only option. You know, we're not, our students didn't have a seat at the table with the president to decide what the university was going to do. But I think starting there is a great place. What else do you think our faculty friends should consider as they're transitioning?
Yeah, I mean, some things are just, you know, very basic to online courses in general. So I'll start there and then start to transition a little bit more into talking about, you know, leadership education specifically, which is something that I've spent a lot of time, you know, doing both in my own practice, but as well as in my scholarship. So, you know, the first thing would be, you know, communication early and often. My colleagues often make fun of me for my lengthy syllabi. And I said, well, you've got a colleague on your department that has a doctorate in curriculum and instruction. What did you expect from a college of education? And so these are just things that, you know, my students now expect my 18 to 20 page syllabi. But I tend to get a little, just a few less questions overall than my peers from students about what are the expectations of this assignment? Where do we access this or that? How should this presentation look? Or, you know, what are, you know, even rubrics and things like that are integrated there. And so, you know, if it's your first time opening up your LMS, whether it be Blackboard or Canvas or Brightspace or you name it, you know, there's some things just to keep in mind. So what, one of the things that we've found from the research on online education generally is that the amount of communication from the professor has the most statistically significant effect on the student evaluations during that particular semester. Just that weekly check-in, or in fact, during this time, I'd probably say even more often, but that can have a huge, huge impact on, you know, just knowing that the faculty member is still present. Because particularly when you're remote, when you're online, you know, you don't have that interaction like you did previously. And so your students want to know that you're still around, you know, whether, regardless of if it's an introductory undergraduate course or a doctoral seminar, these things are going to be, you know, really, really, really important. That engagement is going to be very, very, very important. And, you know, I would say too, you know, having some conversations based on the types of resources that that you have at your institution, you know, do you move to a fully asynchronous environment where it is, you know, discussion boards and assignments that, you know, are only for your eyes, you know, or some type of mix of those, or are you going to go to some type of synchronous environment, you know, that allows, you know, a combination of, you know, Zoom meetings or whatever, you know, forum or software or what have you for web conferencing that your institution offers. And, you know, that could be something that you make a decision about unilaterally, that you poll your students. You know, it depends on how quickly you've got to make this transition.
I think that's such a good point. I had a conversation. My best friend is a faculty member at the University of Miami, and she called me and she's like, I can't decide asynchronous or synchronous. And I was like, well, do hybrid. And, you know, the things that you're comfortable with, you know, get online, do live, and the things that you're not comfortable with, you know, see if you create some kind of electronic assignment through Canvas or whatever your LMS platform is. You know, it right now, because we're in this stage where we got to move online fast, you don't want to take too much time thinking through things that you would normally have 6 to 8 weeks to plan. Like if this were, you know, your regular course scheduling, you would know well in advance, months in advance, that this was coming. And so, you know, don't take too much time in making those decisions. And if you can't decide between two options, can you still productively include both? Like I know for my class, a big issue for them, my courses, they wanted that face-to-face engagement. I said, all right, well, we're going to meet live on Zoom once a week and we're going to have talks and I'm going to start with the same opening I have for every class. What's going well and where do you need some encouragement? Just so we keep that familiarity as best we can and that consistency as best they can. as we're in this time of massive transition. I think that's another thing. My department shared this kind of, you know, keep what you can the same and then change what you need to. Don't feel like you have to now masterfully create this online course, you know, overnight or in a couple of days or in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, definitely. Don't try to, don't try to reinvent the wheel, but we're having to put this wheel on an electric car instead of a gas car or something mm-hmm. Of that nature. And so, you know, it has me thinking specifically about, you know, you're not designing a course from scratch. We're doing some redesign. And, you know, if we're thinking about, you know, basic curriculum and instructional design, you know, what types of instructional and assessment strategies are you going to be able to use to still meet the learning outcomes of your course and make sure that your students, you know, get, you know, leave with those big dreams that you had for them when they registered for your course. So there are some instructional and assessment strategies that are easy transfers that are specific to leadership education courses. So the first would be case studies. If that is something that you're used to using, and just as a primer, before I talk about this in a little bit more depth. So some research that I did that was published in 2016 looks specifically at and exploring some of the instructional assessment strategy uses that we use for teaching leadership online. It was in the Journal of Leadership Education. So I actually have some data that shows, hey, these are the types of instructional and assessment strategies that leadership educators use most often when they teach online. And so while that may have changed a little bit since the study was published, you know, I would have, my sense is that not too dramatically. And so case studies are one of those that you may have already been using, whether it be, you know, something that you send home with your students to work on or something that you might have students work in small groups. That is something that you can still very much do during your classes when you're moving those online. You know, think about any types of assignments or any types of activities, while you may not be able to run, you know, simulations and games and role plays and some of these more experiential types of learning, which is disappointing because, you know, that is something that tends to be a little bit harder to transfer to the online space. There are ways to utilize different types of experiential learning and still create some type of experience for your learners. So case studies is a great one. If you are looking for some more case studies, there's a great site that is run by Stanford University. The URL is www.leadershipandfocus.net, and they have, I don't know, somewhere around 100 video cases. Onto this, I don't even remember how early in my career teaching, and they've kept it up. It's free; just have to create a login and a password. Just a great set of case studies, but just as well, cases don't have to be written. They don't necessarily have to be structured video cases, although those are, and they do include some instructor's guide. I think about half of them also include some instructor's guide with some great discussion questions, but media clips just as well. TED Talks. I mean, this is a time where if you were going to show some of this content in class and it's readily available, you know, make sure that things have subtitles. If you have anybody in your courses that may need that type of arrangement, you know, these are great ways to incorporate some of that, or even perhaps more of that, because of the transition that we've had to make. So case studies, media clips, again, great. Self-assessments. These may have also been something that you either sent students home with to work on, or that you would normally do in your class as a springboard for conversation. If you are familiar with the Nordhaus book, for example, the back of every chapter includes some type of self-assessment, whether it be the least preferred coworker scale or the followership questionnaire, you know, you name it. These are great and not only widely used instructional strategies that you can easily transfer to the online. And, you know, whether you're going to create discussion boards or other types of ways for students to respond, that's another great way to get your students engaged. And one other thing to kind of keep in mind, while leadership education does tend to have a very reflective nature in it. If we think about Kolb's learning cycle, of course, we want students to reflect on their experiences and to provide examples in the things that they they write about. But do keep in mind, as is good practice with any online course, some things are much more fitting for a discussion board type of, setup, if you will. There may be things that you want them to discuss with their peers, and there may be some things that are more personal that you just want them to submit to you. So perhaps be flexible with some of those things. It doesn't mean that you have to, throw out all of the dialogue that you would hope to have in class, for the sake of this online format. You can certainly put some of those things onto the discussion boards, but if there are things that you want, students to keep a little more personal, or just between you, or something that has more of an assessment nature, have them turn that into you, individually. Also, did you have a group project that you were working on? I mean, that is a big one. I know that I had to redesign a group project in my introduction to leadership class this semester. So I had students, and this is one of my favorite activities that I assign in this class, and I'm going to be really disappointed that they don't get to do this one, which was an assignment basically called leadership theater, where students would work in groups of, 3 to 5, depending on the size of the class, and put together a short skit that represented a particular set of leadership models or theories or concepts from the semester. There was kind of a blueprint for what that performance would look like, and then they would facilitate a discussion around some of the things that they did. Well, doing a skit on Zoom is not going to work, and we'll talk about synchronous learning in just a moment. But instead, I resurrected an old assignment called Leadership in Film, where students used about no more than 10 minutes worth of clips from a movie or a show that also demonstrated some of these terms and concepts. And so I modeled this for my students last Friday, knowing that we'd be moving to a fully online or synchronous environment in the coming weeks. And we use Remember the Titans. There's a great activity in the Exploring Leadership for College Students Who Want to Make a Difference workbook and facilitation guide around their leading in communities. I think that's the name of that chapter. And just a great way to model, there's some great elements of community. I think we used Gardner's elements of community for this particular activity. And it really ended up being a great conversation and springboard for some of these things. The last thing I'll say before I look for Lauren to chime in a little bit, because I'm getting a little long-winded here, is about discussion and discussion boards. If you're working in a completely asynchronous environment, one of the things that I'm glad that I learned early and often was this idea of creating some timelines for the response post for your students. So what tended to happen in those first couple semesters where I was teaching online is I'd say, hey, post a response to these three questions and then respond to three of your peers or whatever it is. And some instructors like to do word counts or word limits or, something like that. But what would happen was students would post, and then in the last 6 hours before things were due, you'd get all the response posts. And so what I've moved to doing, which has worked extremely well for, probably 8 to 10 years now, was to set a deadline for those initial posts, whether it be a week or 5 days or whatever it is, depending on how you structure your different units or modules, and then have a separate time that's dedicated specifically for the response post, so that everybody has something to respond to. And I found that has worked much, much better than trying to just do a free-for-all. And students really will appreciate any structure that you can provide and any additional structure that you can provide during this time.
Yeah, you gave me like a laundry list of things to do. This is actually my first time teaching a course online. I've gone through a ton of certification and taken a bunch of workshops and different things, and I'm pretty familiar with Zoom and its platform. And you just shared a bunch of ways to take, what we already know as faculty members and what we already know about pedagogy and move it into this online format in a semi-crisis situation. There's a sense of urgency. you know, there's panic, there's a lot of anxiety happening. And so those are some really good ways to take things we already know and just figure out how to do them online. I think something that's equally as important to discuss is how our leadership programming friends are dealing with this as well. And there's definitely some overlap between two sides. I think about my programming friends, I think the first thing is communicating with students about what your engagement is going to look like. So student affairs and student leadership education is a very hands-on, attend this workshop, come to this team building activity. And so I know our office at Temple has already sent out an email saying, we're still here. Let us know how we can continue to support you. And we do have some online training available. So it was good to know that their leadership was forward-thinking and preparing just as we were. I think about, I give extra credit for my students to participate in their workshops during the semester. You know, if they can't go to these workshops for extra credit, then what are they going to do? And so it's just nice to know that their office has communicated to faculty and to students that they're still there working and that it's still an option. I also think, and this I think applies for both faculty and programmers, is telling people what you don't know, and not in a way that you come across incompetent, but are there things that you're still thinking about? So do you have a program scheduled for June, and have you made a decision, and are you just waiting to see what the university says? Thinking about sharing those things that you help students, it helps the students to realize that you are thinking about it, you just haven't made a decision, versus not being on your radar at all. I know my students fall into a space where they think about what's not being said instead of just listening to what I'm saying and the information I'm giving. It's like, okay, you said all of those things, but what are you not saying and how can I think about that? And so I think in these spaces, it's important to make sure you're saying, like, these are the things we haven't decided, or these are the questions we still have and are trying to explore ourselves, because that'll go a long way with students. And you don't have to say everything, but just a couple of things here and there would be helpful. The next thing is thinking about those online resources they already have access to that you can engage. So for example, can you now schedule lynda.com training for skill building if your university has that? You know, what other resources are already in place so you're not creating an extra portal, but you're again giving students opportunities to engage and learn and still develop. So I think those are just some things. If I were a leadership program director, those are some of the things that I know that's out there. I also think too, one thing that you mentioned about the resources available, I've gotten a ton of emails from resource providers about how they're now taking the paywall down and allowing people to access their resources for free. For example, I just saw an email from the Center for Creative Leadership where they have a bunch of resources in crisis leadership that now people can access. So while it's a great, to me, it feels like a great corporate social responsibility play or initiative, you know, they're sharing their resources in this time of crisis when they know people are looking for them. But it also is a great way to get access to materials to see if you like it before you buy it. Like, you may stumble upon a paid resource that you wouldn't have stumbled upon if you didn't have access. So, you know, not only thinking about the resources that your university offers at the platforms that are already paid, but thinking about what companies are giving access to their resources now. So anything else, Dan, anything come to mind while I was doing my own little soapbox rant?
Yeah, no, it's really been interesting to see what resources that perhaps educators weren't really aware of that were associated with various publishers, and seeing a lot of open access occur for whether it be, you know, VitalSource, which is a great place to get access to your textbooks online. Some faculty and staff are being told you can't go back to your offices right now, or students can't check out books from the library. And so while many books are available as eBooks, some are not. And so these publishers taking that extra step to do that is really helpful. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm glad to see, as you said, maybe whether it's that, you know, that corporate social responsibility or just a show of good faith. You know, I think that is certainly moving things in the right direction.
Yeah, you bring up a really good point about our campus library. That's my favorite place in the world, and I can't believe I didn't mention it in the resources conversation. But there's so many leadership resources they have online. And another faculty just shared a live streaming website that they were able to procure because this was an emergency situation, where you can now have your students watch documentaries and different movies that normally they wouldn't have that access to. So I feel bad. I completely forgot about my library peers. I also think the other thing is I started my class, my last in-person class this semester the other day with, well, my new teaching philosophy is give and receive grace. And I think that's kind of like a great way to bring this to a close. Like, we're all, you know, in this boat, struggling to kind of get to shore and struggling to, you know, finish our semesters and still make sure we're holding students accountable and meeting those learning outcomes. But at the same time, like, what's happening to us is very unprecedented. And many of us in higher education haven't dealt with anything like this or seen anything like this since like 9/11, which was, you know, almost 19, 20 years ago. And so as we're trying to put this stuff online, maybe loosen up your standards a little bit and be okay with making mistakes and admitting those mistakes as you're trying to do something that's just a really tough challenge, a really steep mountain to climb in a short amount of time with little, you know, to no training. So I think that's the advice. That's the philosophy I've been trying to take through this whole thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're going to recreate our spaces as best we can. And so, you know, one of the things, you know, to keep in mind, I mentioned a little bit about, you know, asynchronous learning and discussion boards. Knowing what I know about leadership education, discussion is our signature pedagogy. Discussion and dialogue is what we do most often in our leadership courses. And if you are, you know, forced into an asynchronous environment, you know, that is going to be, you know, something that you're going to, you know, recreate to your best that you can via your discussion boards and your LMS. If you're lucky enough to have, you know, Zoom web conferencing or another format where you can go online and meet synchronously during these times, whether it be weekly or every other week, you know, be aware of some of the other tools that are out there and available to you for doing that. It doesn't just mean everybody log on and then you know, you lecture for 2.5 hours. It means, you know, use the Zoom web conferencing as an opportunity for dialogue. You know, venture out and use, you know, see what you have available with the Google Suite. I know that many campuses that also have Zoom web conferencing or Google Hangouts also have the entire Google Suite that includes the Google Docs and Google Slides. I mean, having, you know, you bring back the old think, pair, share. You know, you can have, you can pose a question, you know, give me an example of a time where, you know, you were in a situation, you know, where there was a crisis leadership situation or you had to deal with rapid change, for example, you know, and they can put their initials, you know, behind their response and post it to the same Google Doc that everybody's using within the same class. You can have a Google Doc up that everybody is interacting on while you do your web synchronous class on Zoom. Another method that I've seen instructors use and groups use is that every student has their own color of text that they use. And so that can help to differentiate between different learners. So that's a great way to, you know, utilize that online space. Another way is breakout rooms. A lot of the web conferencing allow for breakout rooms. So small group work was something that was really important to you and your pedagogy. You know, that option, you know, might still exist. And, you know, I've seen instructors that have had students use Google Slides to create little mini presentations, and they can access all that, you know, simultaneously, just like all the other Google Suite tools. And you can even have students give each other feedback using, you know, Google Forms and some of the other tools. So, you know, again, don't try and recreate, you know, the wheel, but there are some tools at your disposal that you may not have, you know, thought about the utility in certain ways. And just to, you know, think outside the box a little bit and be creative, but also, you know, don't feel, again, like you have to design a brand new class. But, you know, do reach out to your peers and your colleagues and, you know, share anything that you've found that has been helpful to, you know, make this transition, which, you know, could be temporary, might even stream into the summer. I know that our first 7 weeks of our summer term, we've been asked to continue to stay online. Whether that will progress through the duration of the summer, we're not sure yet. So we've done some of our classes online for the summer.
We're in the same boat. We've moved our summer one. We don't do summer two, but we have our summer one courses have been moved online already. I mean, I think like where we can close might be, you know, we study leadership for a living, and this is a great opportunity to practice what we preach. And so if you're thinking of yourself as a leader in your space, whether, you know, you're a faculty member, or whether you're, you know, leadership program director or assistant director or coordinator, you know, just think about in this space, what are some of the things we tell people, or what are some of the things we look for from our leaders, and kind of use that as your guide. So Dan, if you don't have anything else,
that's it.
I think this wraps up our emergency episode, our first ever emergency episode podcast. We have such a serious plan for podcasts that it's nice to kind of step out of that plan and move forward. We'd like to thank you all for joining us on this journey as we're becoming and being Leadership Educator Podcast. You know the routine. You know, you can get us wherever you listen to podcasts, whether that's on iTunes or other streaming platforms. Again, rate us 5 stars. The more stars we get, the closer to world dominance we can get. And then we could take over the leadership educator world, or just, you know, keep providing these awesome episodes for our peers. We want to share that you can follow us on Twitter. Dan is at Dr. Leadership with an underscore between Dr. and Leadership. And I am at Mrs. Larjb, MrsLaurjb on social media. Thank you for the great funding that we get from the James M. Cox Jr. Institute for Journalism, Innovation, Management, and Leadership within the Grady College of Journalism and Mass Communication at the University of Georgia, facilitated by Dr. Keith Herndon, the William S. Morris Chair in News Strategy and Management.
Yep, and our wonderful theme music was composed, performed, and mixed by Dr. Matthew White, trumpeter, composer, and educator, and he's currently the Associate Professor of Trumpet, Coordinator of Jazz and Commercial Music, and Director of Ensembles at Coastal Carolina University. You can check him out at www.mattwhitejazz.com. Matt, thanks again for sharing your musical genius with our audience.
And finally, thank you to the Association of Leadership Educators. Check out what the ALE has to offer at leadershipeducators.org.
You can find episodes wherever podcasts are available. Thank you.